So hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with me, Stephen Cha, and Otelia Edwards.
Hello, hello.
What are we talking about today?
We are talking about, I think, an issue that's very close to a lot of people's hearts.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but we all know of someone, I think, or somebody who has been scammed.
Yeah, that's right. Scams are among us, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that technology is being used to scam these people. So today we want to talk a bit more about that, find out how technology is really changing the game, because in 2024, scam victims lost around 1.1 billion Singapore dollars to scams. And that's a record, well, that we don't want to break.
No, that is a staggering number. It is certainly something of concern.
Okay, welcome guys. So, you know, we've all heard stories of people being scammed or nearly scammed. And unfortunately, tech is being used a lot these days to scam these people, to trick them into believing something is when it isn't, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so how do we approach this, you know?
So it's a really, really big problem. And I think the problem is that it's been growing exponentially for the last few years. Fundamentally, like, you know, it's a business. And I think that's one of the things that we have to realize. One of the big differences with what we're seeing, it's not opportunistic. It's not people randomly, you know, calling up or trying to con people that they just happen to meet. It is an industrial business where they have an entire setup, an entire compound and training and specialization to try and figure out how to get money out of people. So it is a problem. The key thing I think that we need to recognize is that there's a soft saying in tech, the problem is between keyboard and chair, where for whatever you do with the technology, ultimately it is a person-to-person issue where you need somebody to convince someone else to do something. And there's a lot of tools that technology can use to make that easier or harder. And our job is to try and figure out how to make this a lot harder for people to do.
Right.
It is not possible to stop it entirely, but if we don't, but the scammers are very smart and very, very, very well motivated. So if we don't, and so they are very, very up to date in terms of using tech to figure out ways to, you know, separate you from your money.
So you've mentioned that these scammers are sophisticated. They target people, right? They feel that they're vulnerable. So I'm curious, have you guys been targeted in some shape or form by scammers?
Yeah, absolutely. So not myself, but actually my organization, I felt like I made it as a civil servant, as an organizer, when somebody tried to impersonate me to the rest of the
Right.
So they got an email, the whole OGP got an email basically saying, oh yeah, you know, Hygiene here, I have lost access to my email, please wire me some money and stuff like that. So I think it's quite common, not only for ourselves as individuals, but as organizations as a whole.
Yeah, did you make any money from that?
No, I didn't make any money.
So it didn't work, yeah.
And hogging yourself?
I mean, you get your random phone calls all the time, you get random text messages. And yeah, as Hygiene said, you'll get people impersonating you in various sort of means. And they'll just try to email the org, pretend to be you. I think one of the strangest ones I had was that created calendar events and sent them out to people, asking them to come to our office to meet me, which wasn't me.
And did people turn up?
Yeah, people turned up and they're like, oh, I'm here to meet. And I was like, oh, I'm really sorry, but I never sent this.
Right, right.
And it's unfortunately remarkably easy to do these things nowadays. I think almost everybody at least knows someone who has been scammed personally at this point.
Right.
Maybe
right.
a large amount, maybe a small amount, but everyone knows at least somebody at this point. And that just shows how prevalent the problem is.
But help us understand also, right? I mean, we are a fairly educated population in Singapore. Mm. And yet, the people, you know, who always say, it's not going to be me, I'm not going to get scammed, also end up being scammed. So why is this happening?
The big misconception that I think we need to get out from people is that you have to be stupid or greedy to be scammed.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely not true. So one of the easiest misconceptions is that, like, oh, you know, the scam victims are just poor elderly people, which there are, definitely. But, like, I think 70% of scam victims are under the age of 50.
Wow.
So the vast majority are actually under the age of 50. Now, the people over the age of 50, I think, have the biggest losses per person, like, per case. But it hits everyone. And very importantly, it is not even that you are, oh, you're not sharp enough or you're too stupid to identify this. Like some of the mechanisms they use, just for example, right? I think previously they had found a way to send text messages under the DBS SMS sender ID, which meant that, like, you would have all your legitimate DBS text messages, and then in that same thread on your phone, one of those messages would be a scammer text message.
Yep.
There's no way to defend yourself against this, because, like, how are you supposed to know that particular text message of all the others is not legitimate? Similarly, if you're looking at, like, downloading apps, you're right that, like, oh, why you download this stupid app that, you know, puts malware on your phone? But the fact is that a lot of businesses nowadays ask you to download an app to transact with them. Similarly, and like I think one of the other mistakes is people thinking, oh, you can tell by the language or the way they use. Absolutely not. I think I remember when the OCBC scam came out, like they would send literally the exact same message with the exact same wording as a legitimate bank message,
just scary.
Changing the link a little bit. And there's no way you can identify these things. Like, it is not a... It is not a reasonable thing to say, if only you are sharper or smarter or better, then you can do it. It is a fundamental structural problem where the way we interact with each other is a very high trust society. And that's given us a lot of benefit. But as a result of, you know, Singapore being a high trust society for so many years, we haven't developed the defenses of people, you know, taking advantage of this.
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit, because you're right. I mean, it's so, well, in the past, the English wasn't so good, but with AI now, they can easily fix that.
Trivial.
So the challenge now is the bad guys versus the good guys. Mm. You guys are helping push products that we use tech for good things to help us live more convenient, efficient lives. But at the same time, the bad guys are riding on that wave to, as you just mentioned, come in a little bit here and there to lead us astray.
Yeah.
How do we deal with that? Because we want to be, well, we're working towards a smart nation. We want to evolve. But at the same time, there are these concerns about these other forms of tech being used for you know, bad.
So it's kind of like understanding what actually causes damage and where it comes from. It is not technology as an aggregate that results in these problems. It is very specific points of failure that we have not managed to get right that result in this. I think key things are identity. When you meet people in person and you're, you know, physical space, you're used to being able to verify people. As things get online, as people say, you know, on the internet, no one knows if you're a dog.
Right.
We do not have a proper sort of robust, generally available identification mechanism for people talking to each other online in Singapore. And so, you know, this happens.
What would that look like when you say an identification system?
So in tech, this is well known. In tech, you have this thing called your public and private key. So you generate a public key which used to identify you, and you keep a secret so that you can use to verify who yourself is. You can imagine doing something maybe not quite so technical, but with SingPass or something like that. Some mechanism by which if I am talking to another Singapore or someone claiming to be another Singaporean, it should be possible for me to verify who they are.
So a good example of this is Coffee Meets Bagel, right? I think they recently integrated with SingPass.
This is an online dating platform,
right?
Yeah.
So if you, I mean, and sort of scams have sort of dropped reasonably precipitously on Coffee Meets Bagel. And that's just one way of like making sure that, you know, you're not talking to a bot.
What do they do?
So basically, I think what it looks like is that if you want to set up a dating profile on Coffee Meets Bagel and you're a Singapore resident, verify yourself with SingPass.
I see. Okay.
So if you're a bot or anything, you don't have that.
So in other words, if I put myself as Steven there, there's a way to verify that it actually really is me.
That's right. Of course you're married.
Of course
you won't
I'm not
there.
No,
you won't be
there. I just have coffee and a bagel at home, but I don't go online. Yeah.
You can't fake your height. You know, it's just straight up on Coffee Meets Bagel. SingPass has that data. Yeah.
But the tricky thing is these impersonation scams, right? Like somebody could pretend to be a police officer, for instance. Mm. And you mentioned that there is this high trust issue, and there you are panicking because the police officer says, you know, if you don't, you know, pay something, and then happens. But how do you combat that?
So I think there are two parts to this. There is the reactive part where you're trying to solve the acute problem that shows up, and then there's the sort of like proactive part where you're actually trying to figure out what should people actually do. The big problem we have is that all the ways the scammers contact you are actually ways that the government does actually contact you. The government does call you from random phone numbers saying, hello, I'm from LTA or URA or HDB or the police, and ask you for things. They do text you from random numbers. And I think before we consolidated all the government SMSs into gov.sg, there was like, I think, a few hundred different phone numbers that the government's using to text you. And how are you? And even though you could publish a list, you can tell people to look out. But realistically, a person cannot verify this because everything, that's why I was saying that everything that the scammers do, the government actually legitimately does normally as well.
Right.
So we need to make sure that we need to design our protocols rather than just assuming, if I call you and I tell you I'm from MOH, you believe me.
Mm.
How does, like, we need to build it into our mechanisms that how does a government officer verify when they talk to you? How does a property agent verify themselves when they're talking to you?
So that's what you're working on now.
Those are some of the components we're working on. We just launched a few months ago the gov.sg kind of SMS system, right? Where instead of the government texting from a whole bunch of different numbers, now it just comes under gov.sg. Now you know that if it's from gov.sg, it's from the government.
Yeah.
And that way, rather than me trying to plug 100 holes of all the different things to not believe, it's like, trust this instead.
Mm.
Then on the reactive part, there's different mechanisms you have to look at, right? So, for example, scammers still manage to get Singapore phone numbers because even though you're supposed to only sell SIM cards to Singaporeans, actually, we don't track it as well as we'd like. And so they somehow manage to, you know, there are mules and stuff who buy SIM cards to sell scammers. Same for the bank accounts. Even when we block all the overseas bank accounts, actually, they somehow manage to get Singaporeans to set up bank accounts for them and mule money for them. And it's so sophisticated to the point where actually the scammers will pay someone to set up a bank account for them, but then give them a story to tell the police that, someone conned me into setting this up and it's not my fault. And you can't notice on an individual basis, but when the police start investigating a few cases, they realize all these people tell the same story, and therefore it's like, oh, that's weird. They're probably
coordinating. This was the time when some guys were also selling their SingPass credentials.
Mm. No, exactly.
Right. So.
So why does it somehow always feel like, you know, and it's not just a Singapore problem, right, globally,
of course,
we're always still one step behind the scammers, you know? Why is that so? I mean, will we ever come to a point where actually we are ahead of the game?
I think we're not there yet. But the reality is that because this is a business, as Hong was talking about, they're always going to try and find the easiest way to exploit you, right? So every time we block a channel, we make some sort of like checks on a channel, they'll try and find something else. Because it's an ROI for them. It's a return on investment. Yep. If they're investing in moving things through different areas, whether it's banks and now they're starting to use vouchers or like Amazon credits, these are all different ways to move money out of the country, potentially, among other things. And that's just something that we just need to keep adapting to. So sorry to be a little bit of a pessimist, but we always have to be reactive. The question is like, how fast can we react?
So right. It's not one problem. That's what you have to realize. It's just like cancer isn't one illness. It's a whole bunch of illnesses. And, you know, if you know things about biology, like even though you can, particular forms of cancer can be cured, there are a million different ways your body can go wrong. And similarly for crime, physical crime is not one problem. It is a continuous thing, as SPF says, you know, low crime doesn't mean no crime, right? No matter. And we've had decades trying to solve that. That is the case of what this is. It is a class of problems, and we have managed to solve individual ones. But because there is money to be made, your adversaries are trying to work very aggressively to figure out all the different ways to go. And so you are trying to keep up. It is not... You know, you can get your key components in place.
Correct.
You get identity infrastructure, you get reporting infrastructure, you get investigation mechanisms, you get ways to block the banks. But rather than think about this as a single problem, think about it from a perspective of like, if you are a very, very intelligent person with no scruples, what is the most effective way that you can get money out of people?
Yeah, exactly.
And it is a general open-ended creative solving
and
problem.
And because that incentive is so great for them, you know, they are true entrepreneurs in that sense in finding ways to get around our systems. How much of this also has to do with the fact that we are a high trust society in Singapore, because for so long we have trusted a lot of government products, platforms, so that we tend to not really second guess when it comes to
yes.
Right?
So we are also a bit complacent in that sense.
Yes. I think less so nowadays. People are getting more guarded. It's really interesting. You can see the numbers picking up, and like, you know, when this stuff first started, like probably 10 years ago, that's probably when it first started like getting, but numbers were a lot smaller than they were today. But most people didn't even know about it. Now, I don't think anyone is not aware, but this, and even though people don't fall for the obvious stuff anymore, their sophistication has evolved quite aggressively.
So it's not just about being a high trust society, right? It's being pretty digital native society. Like you have, almost all of our transactions are done on our phones, right? Generally speaking. And that sort of ease and muscle memory of like, oh yeah, somebody needs money. And it's not just about like, you know, trusting the government. You trust your insurance provider, you trust your healthcare provider. And these are all things where you're saying, oh, you have a bill. Yep, I guess I should pay.
It is really good to have a high trust society because that makes a lot of things we do a lot easier.
Yep.
But you need to make sure that trust is placed on the actual people you trust. Like if you trust the government, that's great. Then, you know, you can work with them a lot more easily. If you trust your neighbors, that's great. If you trust that people on Carousell you want to buy or sell things from, they're generally not going to cheat you, that's great. As long as it's an actual other person. The problem is not the trust per se. The problem is that the trust is easily stolen. That someone else can come in and pretend to be these people that
taken
you actually
advantage
trust.
Of.
Exactly. And it is exploited. So the trust itself is good, but that creates an opportunity for someone to steal that trust and use it to do other things.
Are we in a little bit of a limbo as well? Because I think we've had like the CDC vouchers, a very simple thing that we use, you know, it's all online.
Yes.
But I mean, when it first came out, we were concerned for many of the elderly folks in terms of how they would use it. And till today, I still know stories where they say, oh, I don't know how to use it. They basically give their phone to the guy to then tap on it for them, you know. So it's little things like that, which means he could easily take advantage of that situation if he really wanted to.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you have to look at it from a very pragmatic perspective. if you're asking, are there ways that people could take advantage of your systems? Yeah. Yes, probably. If you're, you know, the person you're buying things from online, or the person at the grocery store could miscount the items and overcharge you. All these things are possible. So you have to look at it from a pragmatic perspective of like, what are the things that people are actually exploiting, and like focus on the biggest sources of harm first while creating general infrastructure that most people don't. So for example, in Singapore, the reason why people don't steal from each other that much in Singapore is not because like every single interaction is a calculated, can I cheat something out of you? But because there's a general acceptance that in Singapore, if I cheat people, bad things will happen to me and generally my life will be worse.
Okay.
And so it is better on average to be trustworthy. And so you create a kind of cultural norm by having a broad social enforcement of, you know, crime enforcement and things like that, which is what the police do and they do a great job of. The problem is that for these people, the scammers, like, they're not Singaporean. Like, they have Singaporean people, they have to collaborate with them, but like the vast majority of the actual sort of kingpins and stuff are overseas, and a lot of the operations are overseas. And so you cannot bind them by your social norms, in which case you must have much more specific targeted enforcement on like of these transactions. So we took it for granted that most of the people we deal with are bound by the same by the same system, and that's no longer true.
So does OGP actually, you have a checklist to make sure that you cover all bases?
Oh no. So I think maybe the way I would describe it is that we are very, very nascent right now in our technologies to fight this. We have just gotten started. We have just started getting our SMSs consolidated. We're working on other mediums and other calls and other mechanisms by which we can protect the things. But I think at this point, we are looking at it from a like, not that we have the luxury of having all the systems built and checklist of what components to use. We are looking at it from perspective of there are 100 things that we could possibly do. We have ways of sort of collecting information about scammers. We have ways of like trying to extract information about scammers. We have ways of verifying SIM cards. And so right now our strategy is, all right, given this universe of 100 possible interventions, what are the key choke points that we know we need to control that at least start getting us some ground in this space?
Okay.
So we know that we need a way for people to report, to detect it more quickly. That's what Scam Shield is for. So Scam Shield, while, you know, helps filter things out on your phone, which is useful, actually the biggest value of it is that because these scams go en masse, it helps the government realize and the police to realize this is happening much more quickly than if we didn't have it. We need a mechanism by which you can trust a message coming to you. I don't know about protecting all the other messages. If some random person messages you on LinkedIn, I don't know what to do about that. But at least you know when a government officer is talking to you. We need mechanisms to shut down bank accounts. So this is something that the SingPass team is working on, where if one bank knows that this person has made a mule account, all the other banks should immediately be notified and like lock things down. There are a lot of different potential intervention points you could imagine. I think our strategy is not to just randomly do a whole bunch of things. We are trying to get anchors on the key control points so that we can tell people, rather than don't do all these things, follow these concrete steps and you will generally be safe.
So in a way, the challenge is because there is so much out there.
Yes.
It's finding that, well, so-called sweet spot that will try and cover the most bases possible in the most reasonable way without also sacrificing the convenience and efficiency that we currently get with the tools, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So for the checklist, I mean, to your question on the checklist, a checklist is fundamentally limited. Right, like it is an evolution of what we think the best practices could be.
Yeah,
but actually, the best practices come from like how do your citizens or your residents in Singapore engage with scams? What is their experience with it? What is their user journey? And that forms a large part of how we work on things. So even for Scam Shield, and you were talking about elderly with Redeem, the CDC vouchers, we do a lot of extensive research. Like we put these products at a prototype level in the hands of citizens and residents to say, does this solve your problem? Actually, what are your problems that you feel that this is solving for you or not solving for you? And that's part of our process. That's, I think, the key part of our process.
So to give you an example, one of the things we were testing previously was how to help people identify a government officer is actually calling you. And there are a lot of ways you can imagine doing this, right? You give the citizen a code that they then have to ask the government officer to show that, actually, I know this code.
Ah.
You could imagine the government officer sending a notification. You could imagine having a calendar invite. You can imagine it showing up your SingPass. You could imagine a dozen different ways in which they identify you. It turns out that even though technically that is one thing to do, when you actually test this with people, the way that, you know, as engineers, we thought was the most robust way was that, okay, we'll give you a secret number, then you have to challenge the government officer who's calling you to give you a secret number. the average person just
nobody
did not,
knew how that worked.
No one understood how it worked.
We just to like mention, we are an aging society, right?
That's right.
So there are all these aged people. I mean,
it's not just old people. It turns out that people have 100 other things to do in their life, and if you teach them like a sophisticated protocol and a dance to do around this, they're just not going to bother to learn it. So you need to find a way. Like, the limiting factor to us protecting people is how easy is it for people to understand.
Yeah, and the thing is, so we've done episodes on scams before, and it wasn't the tech or the tools that were at fault. It was the human behavior.
People.
They were convinced that this guy was truly helping them. He even said, this is in arrears. Call the police at this other number. Let me give you a number and call for Michael Lee. So the person called and continued to believe because it was all part of a larger syndicate that
Correct.
They had in mind. So it's a bit of... So in a way...
A group
no matter,
of people rejecting help. If
no, in a way, the tech all works. It's just that I actually think I'm doing the right thing.
So I would argue that means the tech doesn't work.
Oh,
because
okay.
Like, I don't believe in the Steve Jobs, you're holding it wrong mentality. I believe if the whole point of our systems is to protect people, and people, despite these systems, aren't protected, we need to figure out a better way of doing it.
But at the same time, you want to give people the liberty to make choices, to say...
Oh, absolutely.
Right? I can choose to send the money regardless of what... You know?
So in those cases that you said, I'm familiar with cases like this, and you look at it, you know, you read the reports and you see, like, yeah, by the time they're fully taken in, it's really, really hard to intervene. So what could we have done before that? Like, maybe up front, like, you know, when this person contacted you, at that point, if we knew this was a known compromised number, NRC, we should have blocked something there. Or at the point where you're doing your first interaction, your first transaction, we should have flagged out like, hey, this number has gotten a lot of weird payments going into recently. Or we could have created other mechanisms where, like, if this was going out en masse, then the government could detect this en masse and then send you a notification if we knew a lot of people were getting hit by this. Like, hey, this is a common trend.
Okay.
So you are right that at that point, that's like saying, you know, when you get hit stage 4 cancer, there's nothing you can do. That's generally true. But that doesn't mean there's nothing you can do at all. It just means your intervention has to be a lot earlier.
If we had caught it earlier.
Yes. And that means that even though our current technology, it does something, it doesn't mean, if it doesn't actually solve the problem, I would argue that actually there are a lot more things that we can do, at least in my view.
So you've mentioned earlier that we are still very nascent.
Yes.
Right? So then how much time, you know, does OGP will need to get us to that point where our scam numbers really come down?
I don't know exactly the time, but I do think that if you were to get anchor, so if you were to sort of break it down into key components, like there's a lot of ways of breaking it down, but key intervention points, you need to make sure people can identify themselves to each other online in a sort of verified way. You need to have some kind of like friction for money movement so that like scammers can't easily set up mule accounts and transfer money out. And it's, you know, and there should be some friction if you're transferring large amounts of money at 3 a.m. from multiple bank accounts that like actually put a hold on it. You can imagine we put friction in terms of the hook itself. So even if they manage to contact you at that point, how do we whether it's with Scam Shield or whether it's another verification mechanism or whether it is like Facebook doing something about it, there's a mechanism there. And finally, there's like enforcement mechanisms that you can imagine put in place. I have a fair amount of confidence that you could solve the current problems you're facing probably within a year or two.
Okay.
But I'm also fairly confident that by the time you do so, they will do something else.
Right.
Oh,
so you've done this, then they do this. Then you. So it's always a catch-up.
No, correct, because they are smart. They are not. It is not one problem.
Yeah.
It is people trying to get money out of you, and so you need to think continuously, adaptively. Like, just to give you a simple example, right? A very simple, like previously we told people, hey, you know, look out for the +65 on the numbers. That means it's fake. And then they just stop using the +65. It just, like, they change strategies like that. If you look at all the scam volumes and transfers above $10,000 hypothetically are mostly scams. The moment you put that, they will almost instantly, I guarantee you, they will almost instantly realize that that's the threshold and then move all their transactions to below 10,000.
Yeah.
So the point is that you have to be adaptive. And what I think matters isn't so much the current treatment of the problems, but like the rate at which you can respond. I think that's the key problem.
Is it fair to say that we might always be one step behind? Because government, we want to do it right, make sure it works properly. The bad guys don't care. They just launch it first, figure it out as it goes along.
And not to mention the kingpins are overseas, right? As you mentioned, then having to deal with other governments and all of that. That's also complicated?
Yeah. So it's very easy to get overwhelmed by the problem. Exactly, right? I don't know about like drug raids or scam raids on overseas compounds. I mean, I'm sure MHA and SPF work with their overseas counterparts to do that with far more sophistication than I'm able to even conceive. But what I do know is that, for example, there is no reason why you should have to guess whether the person you're getting a job offer from is a real like, job agent or property agent. I know that. And we're trying to get that correct. I know that there should be no reason why government officers should be calling you from random numbers and saying, trust me, bro, I'm a government, I'm a government officer. Yeah.
So I never pick up my phone, especially when there's no number.
But the darker side of that is, like, I think when we were launching the gov.sg SMS and we were talking to a whole bunch of agencies to figure out how it would work for them. We had pretty sad reports of, you know, we had like social services officers trying to convince people that they were legitimately from the government and we're here to give you help. And they were like, no, you're a scammer and we don't want your support.
Yeah.
So that's the other side of it. I mean, I also don't pick up calls, but
I do think that you will never get fully ahead of it but because you have to react. I mean, you know, the unbound creativity of people trying to make money is going to be extremely large. But you do not have to be 10 steps behind. You can be like one step behind or even half a step behind. Mm-hmm. This is a known thing for almost every tech company. Like if you talk to our counterparts at like Gojek and Grab and Google, for example, when you're giving out money, people come up ways to do it and they have very, very sophisticated, well-developed teams to try and proactively identify and react and do this. They don't do it perfectly, but they do it well enough that it's not a threat to their business. And if they didn't, their business will fall apart. I think looking at what other people are doing, I'm fairly confident we can get to a quite sophisticated state fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. I cannot predict the future of how this will develop, but like, if you're asking, can we get to a place where this is not something you worry about every day? Mm. You can't. Like, emails, for example, used to be completely untenable, right? Like, you just got to a point where it was just full of spam and scam emails. But we have gotten to a point where for most people's Gmail, not all, but for most people's Gmail, you just don't even care. You're like, you more or less trust that.
Most of the rubbish is filtered.
Most of the rubbish is filtered, and it is a tractable problem. Same for credit card fraud.
Yeah.
Credit card fraud is not a problem that... It is a problem. There is credit card fraud. It does occur. But it is not a problem that you stay awake worrying about because we have so much infrastructure and experience dealing with it that you manage to get something solved.
So I guess in a nutshell, I mean, what's that key advice, you know, you would give our listeners to, you know, help themselves and their loved ones from being scammed?
Stay home. Don't spend any money.
Don't pick up phone calls. Set your limit at $20 a day.
Yeah, I'm a bit a kiasu that way. Scared to lose. In my ATM, every transaction, I get an alert. I don't care how small or big it is. I just figured I'd rather know than not know, right?
Yeah,
so
right?
I actually don't think that's the right approach.
Oh, no? Okay.
Because I think that's like... You know, like Singapore is very famous for having low crime. And thanks to the great work that MHA and SPF all do, but their strategy for crime is not just put up a sign being like, watch out for yourself. There are cities like that. There are cities in the world where you basically accept that the crime rate is high and you tell people to buy a gun and watch yourself as you walk out on the street.
Yeah.
And we made a decision for Singapore that we didn't want Singapore to be a place like that. We didn't want Singapore to be a place where you had to like buy a gun and watch out for yourself and look out for getting mugged, and that was just the way the city worked. And
but should I still not be watching out for myself?
But my point is that actually, if I'm looking at what we're doing at Scams, as much as people should protect themselves and the current state and, you know, standard advice being like, don't download things from random sources, like make sure you know who you're talking to, like double check, especially when transferring money, things like that. Actually, I think our aspiration should not be to advise people to the point at which they can protect themselves. Our aspiration should be the point at which just the Singaporeans can go out late at night to get prata at 3 a.m. and not have to worry about getting home safe.
Right.
You should not have to worry when you're interacting with people online in Singapore that you are going to lose your money just from one misstep.
Right. Okay.
So that's your number one goal. That's what you're working towards.
The number two goal is to download ScamShield, to be very clear.
Download ScamShield. Right. Hey, I got to admit, it does filter out a lot of the rubbish, you know. Yeah.
But I think it's beyond that, right? So, I mean, filtering out is great, but what it really helps in is when people report on ScamShield, that goes, you know, to our database. We assess it for whether it's scam or not, and then we close that feedback loop and we try and block those numbers.
Actually, you mentioned a good point, because very often we are waiting for the government to do things for us. Mm. Whereas you mentioned, if you get a number from a caller and you realize it's a scam, report it, add it to the list, because we need to be proactive in supporting the whole infrastructure. It's
correct.
Like crowdsourcing, right?
Correct. You know? Correct.
It's exactly crowdsourcing.
We want because one advantage we have is that if someone targets you and you specifically, hard to defend against. But most of these attacks are very broad-based because they're just hoping to get a hook somewhere. And so we need to take advantage of that vulnerability in the scammer's sort of signature and use that to detect things straight away. There should never be a case where if a scammer is targeting like thousands of people in Singapore that we take like weeks to figure out. We should figure out within a day at most.
Okay, I'm fairly convinced. I will not do an ATM alert for every transaction. Maybe I'll raise it to $300.
From $30.
From $30. Okay, gentlemen, thanks so much for coming in and sharing.
Thank
your
you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Folks, if you've been listening in, we are living in a very high-tech world nowadays. Everything is so much of what we, how we live is online. But if you have thoughts on this, do drop us a note. We do love to hear from you as well. Right here on Deep Dive.
That's right. And of course, a big thanks to our team, our wonderful team who put all of this together. We've got Tiffany Ng, Junani Johari, Joanne Chan, Saye Win, Ho Pei Ning, Nathaniel Fettelvero, Shaza Dalila, and Alison Jenner, and video by Hanida Amin. All right, good stuff. I guess that wraps up this week's edition of Deep Dive.
That's right. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.